Hello and welcome to Positioning 365 Beyond Seating, Ultimate Medical's podcast. My name is Marianne Girardi. I am the physical therapist and a resident certified assistive technology practitioner and the clinical education specialist here at Ultimate Medical. My co-host today is Lawrence Harding, PT. He is president of Spinal Mobility and the developer of the Spinal Mobility Technique, a novel manual therapeutic intervention designed to address trunk weakness due to neurological conditions, including SCI. He is also the director of fitness at the Access Project in New York City, a post-rehabilitation multidisciplinary center that helps to empower people with long-term disabilities and gives them effective tools to pursue and maintain a healthy and active lifestyle. Lawrence is an adjunct professor in the PT department at Hunter College, SUNY, and lectures at several PT programs in New York City, including Columbia University, Stony Brook University, and the College of Staten Island. He is a member of Ultimate Medical's Clinical Advisory Board, the American Physical Therapy Association, and the Academy of Spinal Cord Professionals. Welcome, Lawrence.
Thank you very much, Marianne.
Today, we're going to be talking about standing for individuals with multiple sclerosis. Providing the ability to stand for those who cannot stand is important for many reasons. The benefits of standing include maintaining bone mineral density, maintaining improving range of motion, specifically in the lower extremities. It can have a positive effect on bowel, bladder, and cardiopulmonary function, and it can facilitate the learning or relearning of motor skills. Supported standing can also have a positive effect on an individual's quality of life. Our guest today is Clarissa Perez. She is a PT with 15 years of experience, and she's been on the staff of the Boston Home in Boston, Massachusetts for the past 10 years. Clarissa received her formal education and training in the Philippines, where she worked in acute care and outpatient settings before migrating to the United States. Since coming to the United States, she has worked in short-term rehabilitation and home health settings with clients with orthopedic, neurological, and med-surg impairments. Working in the home health setting enabled her to increase her creativity and resourcefulness to broaden her approach when working with clients in their actual home environment and not the simulated environment at the clinic. She has brought this knowledge with her to the Boston Home. Welcome, Clarissa.
Thank you.
Clarissa, can you tell us a little bit about the Boston Home?
Yeah, I describe the Boston Home as the best of both worlds. It is unique. It's a long-term facility, and it serves adults with advanced multiple sclerosis, at the same time adults that has progressive neurological disorder, but it's mostly for MS. It is one of a kind in New England, and only a handful of this specialized clinic in nationwide. The Boston Home have catered to individuals that uses wheelchairs. We have inpatient and outpatient clinics, and a dedicated program for sitting, spasticity, and a full rehab team. And I'm privileged to work with a team of experts there. They provide quality care to help promote a resident's highest potential. We try to help them thrive and live their best lives and not be defined by their disability. So my role as a physical therapist there is to assess and develop a tailored, individualized functional maintenance program. And this is tailored for each of them, for our residents, so they can maintain their optimal health and wellness as one of their goals.
Clarissa, how long has the Boston Home been in its existence? I've known it my whole experience is working in the Boston area, but when did it actually open?
On the 1800s, it's merely for people that had diagnosed with polio. It started there. I'm not quite sure when they transitioned to just having it like geared towards the MS population, but that was it. It's designed for those who have the side effects of polio. And we have pictures of like the original wheelchairs, like those like 1800 wheelchairs. But I'm sure there's no standing at that time. There's no standing frame at that time. I would be happy to see one if there's any pictures of it during the 1800s.
Yeah. And the wheelchairs back then were pretty interesting. I've actually had the pleasure of being able to go to the, I used to go to the Boston Home with some of my community-based neurological patients. And I can tell everybody it is one of the most unique long-term care facilities that provides programs 24/7 and helping the people there reach their greatest potential and have a good quality of life. So it's a pretty special place. Clarissa, how does the standing program work at the Boston Home?
So standing is the primary goal of most of our residents. It's not for everyone, but most of them that comes there, they would see our program and they'd always say, oh, I want that program for myself, you know. So it's one of the highlights. So we're fortunate because we have a lot of standers. It's mostly donated for us, or we've inherited them. And this includes the EC Stand 5000. We have also tilt table, and then the glider, we have that. That's the most recent donation we have, was the glider. And then we have a dedicated time and at least 2 to 3 staff members that we've trained to follow up with the residents' individualized program. So with that minimum of two staff, we'll transfer a resident to the frame, and then they would set it up based on, you know, the specific setup that we have. And then they would usually dedicate 20 to 30 minutes of being upright. That's pretty standard. Some people can go as high as 60 minutes or 90 minutes, but that's rare. And then the minimum would be 15 minutes. Then we'll have to reevaluate, like, why is that just that low? You know, is there anything else we can improve that? But for almost everybody, it's like that 20 to 30 range. So between that setup and then that aftercare, that would range maybe from 45 to 60 minutes for just one individual. So it's also like hard to combine treatments just because it's very, you have to attend to each needs in case there's an emergency, you have to be available and, you know, putting them down on a mat or calling the nurse. So we make sure that each one is attended to with an appropriate staff member.
Can I ask, please, Clarissa, what are the evaluative aspects that you look for to assess whether somebody is appropriate for standing in your program?
So typically, we would do an initial evaluation first. So, you know, when you come in as a new resident, you do that range of motion, muscle testing, all that, cognition, and then based on that, you would know whether it's a candidate to, you know, standing or not. If they have a more complicated history and medical history, we not really disregard standing, but because there's a lot of like wait lists, so we kind of triage it to who can and can stand. So based on that initial evaluation, we would get medical clearance. So even if we know that they can possibly stand, a doctor's, you know, weight bearing as tolerated would be very beneficial for us. A lot of the residents that comes to the Boston Home has not stand for at least a year. So that bone density and all that, if they have osteopenia, osteoporosis, all that thing. So just a good weight bearing as tolerated from the physician would at least clear us for that initial trial. And then we would consider their extent of, you know, their past and current medical history, how long ago they were weight bearing or standing, and then any restrictions. Some of them has past fracture, recent fractures, any surgical repair. And then of course their cognition, any behaviors, any alertness issue, and then the severity of their spasticity or contracture. So all that would contribute to what type of assessment they don't go straight to the easy stand. Unless their range are good, they don't have any issues with spasticity, then that's pretty straightforward easy stand. But for the most part, I put them on a tilt table just to see if they can actually, they like the feeling of standing and they have a good range to stand. The difference between tilt table and the easy stand, you go from, you know, a straight, like a standing position already in the tilt table versus the easy stand, you have to have a good like hamstring range because you go from like a seated position to a standing position. So a lot of them, they would break out into like an extensor spasm if you don't treat their range first, like their tone, and, you know, give them at least a good stretching. We would do that first, do that initial assessment, initial treatment, and then eventually we'll go to a tilt table. If they have a lot more tone, a lot more range issue, then maybe a bike first, and then a range of motion program, and then eventually maybe 2-3 sessions in a tilt table. If they look good, then we'll try the easy stand. It's pretty easy because, you know, you'd set up based on the seat tab. They have different colors in there. You determine it like the number. It's based on the angle they have, or if you have like, if you need to use different like customized device, like do they need an AFO or an extra foam, or, you know, so we'll have to customize it based on their needs. So all that we would also like get a team to analyze that with us and see what would make it more comfortable for them to stand. So after that, we would establish their baseline and then set up the standing program. At least if they can get to like a good 20, 30 minutes without passing out or without having pain, we would trial that for at least 4 sessions of being consistent, of showing us consistent results. And then we would transition that training to our restorative aids. Like, we won't discharge them right away. We would make sure that the restorative aid would have ease in following the protocol that we have set up. And then they can replicate it more consistently without a therapist always being there and supervising them. So it's just like an on-call. If they need to tweak it or something like that, we will be there to answer their questions. Or
are there any red flags when you're doing your initial evaluation that would prevent you from moving forward with standing? Is there anything in specific that
Red flags? Maybe, I mean, anything acute, you know, if the residents sometimes they're too sick enough, or, you know, their medical condition is not really handled as well. There's a lot of pain, like, because that's one thing that we have. If their pain management is not really addressed, so any movement can be very painful. Just even transfers would be painful. So we'll consider that. What else? Obviously, fractures or any acute injury, we'll have to deal first. Any cardiopulmonary issues, like if they have orthostatic hypertension. But most of them, they're not really as, you know, compared to acute care, where you kind of have to gradually get them from like a 0 to 45 degree of uprightness, because they're pretty much up in the chair. So it's very rare that I've seen cases where they have orthostatic hypertension, except for those that have maybe like a quadriplegia. And but for those that has like a paraplegia level, it's pretty tolerable to stand. What else?
I was going to ask about syncope and hypotension, because in my community-based work through AXIS, people come in with longer-term injuries, you know? Mm-hmm. So the syncope issues, one would expect more from the people with paraplegia, tetraplegia, rather than people with MS. So it's nice to hear the correlation is still the same.
It is. I observe it more with people that can only control their heads versus if they have at least up to like an upper shoulder movement. I've seen them tolerate it more, even if it's only like one-sided weakness, and then it's more tolerable for them. The only problem with those, they do have a lot of, because of that imbalance strength, they do have a lot of that hip pelvic obliquity, and we tend to deal with that first, so they can tolerate being upright, especially on the easy stand, because they're not, you know, they have to have at least a good head control to get there. But it's not impossible. I've done at least three people that only had a head control, and a good head control, like those who can drive their chairs with a head array, at least that level. If they don't have that control, the only thing I can get them is like a tilt table, because you have to support their head.
Yeah, we have had people use the Evolve, but they've had like an eye-to-eye headrest put on it or a custom headrest. Mm-hmm. We have some people who use it with that, but understandably, it's better if they do have some head control and they can look up.
Another thing that we've tried for those who have those syncopal episodes, or so with MS population, is just not the cardiovascular aspect of it, but there's also that fatigue that is very, it's sometimes the driver of the outcome of standing. So let's say they didn't have their good night's sleep. The next day, they still want to do standing because it's the standing day. And you'd see it. They'll just be, their posture's just not there. And they would keep saying, oh, yeah, I'm okay. I'm not tired. And then you'll just see them, you know, not really following the setup protocol that you set up. And the aides are like, I can't get them to stand. So have to educate them. It's not today. Maybe next week you'll try it. And they're pretty much understanding on that. But with syncope, so what works for me before was to do like some type of compression along the abdominal area, like a abdominal binder. I think that's the only thing. Or a compressive stockings.
I was going to ask if you used them.
Yeah, that would get them to at least tolerate 20 minutes max. If not, unfortunately, during that time that I had those levels of resident, we still didn't have the tilt table. It's the most recently acquired gadget we had. But the last one we had, despite the abdominal binder, the resident would still keep on like just fainting. So the doctor's like, your heart's not strong enough for this. Maybe consider other things. So we ended up just doing like a sideline program with this person. But I think if we did have the tilt table, that would be the step down from a easy stand, because we could have, you know, just gradually put him on like a 30, 40 degree standing versus from zero to, you know, from an upright to zero.
Because I've done both ways in my work, again, in the community, where the goal is basically just to educate them and get them mobile, versus using attendees who come to my programming to actually do some clinical, so community-based research in terms of interventions specifically. Do you set goals? Is there measures that you use to assess improvement, standing program that you have there?
So I would set it up based on like what is the available resource, like what's realistic. So at this point, like I would love to have them standing every day, but we don't have that resource. So what the Boston Home offers is at least once per week of the standing. They do have something else, like they have the bikes and the stretching. But for the stander, there is like a running list of 10 individuals who stands now. And then if there's a fallout, like they've missed their standing because of X, Y, and Z, their program will be what you call that, reviewed. And then the next one in line who wants to stand will get that spot. So there's always like that running list of people that can get into that program. So where I, as a therapist, would assess, can they stand at least once a week? Can they stand at least 20 to 30 minutes? If not, why? Like, oh, you need the splint. Okay, so let's do your splint first. You know, your tone's not handled. Let's refer you to tone clinic. Let's fix your tone. You have pain. Okay, let's do your pain. So I guess I would base it on what is available resource. And then if they can get into that functional maintenance program of at least once a week standing. I would love to have like an evidence-based criteria, you know, where I would check off those lists. But on my, I'm just running through like what can I do on the cards that I'm given.
And one of the joys of working with the advisory board has been kind of opening up and sharing experiences of not only the ability, which is what you're mentioning, the ability to be able to stand in the criteria that go into that in terms of range of motion, in terms of cardiopulmonary, in terms of tonal issues. There's also this idea of what other things are beneficial and how do we use our evidence-based practice. And so two things I would throw out there that we have discussed here in our presentations is one, pulmonary benefits of being in the standing position. I was able to do a nice presentation of different activities one could do in standing and assess them using, you know, are we talking volume? Are you talking about forced vital capacity and all of these things that can quite moderately easily, you know, an incentive spirometer is a good measure. That's one. And then the other one was also in terms of flexibility, and we use modified functional reach in standing, or once they return to sitting, does the effect of standing and doing any kind of activities in standing help them modify their functional reach when they return to sitting? It's a good question to ask.
That's, you know, a good one.
So it kind of brings in this idea that, yeah, it's about standing, but typically, as I say to my participants, we don't just stand around. We stand around doing things. Even if we're waiting in line, standing, or we're cooking, or we're, you know, all those other things we do while we're standing. So to kind of find ways to see, yeah, modify, modulate, maximize the standing, but also what other tools do we have to say, this also has effects in these other things that Marianne introduced us with, you know, bowel bladder function. Because clinically, we wouldn't go there as PTs, but.
I think that's a good point about the using a spirometer to make it measurable, and it's easier to make our goals with it. So that's good. In terms of like what we do during the standing program, we do, a lot of them would bring their iPads and play games on it while standing. They bring a book, you know, but when they are on my, like while they're working with me, I would tend to like incorporate the things that typically when you do, when you go to like a short-term rehab, you know, you do standing for balance, blah, blah, blah. So I'd incorporate simple hand movement, like tapping a balloon or doing their arm workout while in there. Very few can do that, you know, because standing alone would be very taxing already, but we try. Or I would incorporate some of their stretches, like just their upper body stretch, their finger stretch, whatever they can do at that level, or just chit chat, because even talking, and that's a good way when you say the spirometer, just talking about, you know, that they're standing and talking is already a good exercise in itself. So yeah, there's a lot of benefits, but I might steal that idea with a spirometer.
I can imagine a whole choir of singers in standing. That would be a nice alliterative practice.
I know, standing.
Or at least kazoos.
Ah, hello. Some of those breathing tools, yes.
Nice.
Could you tell us a little bit, because one of the things that we're always doing outside of standard modifications in terms of, you know, bracing AFOs appropriately, you know, binders for helping pulmonary function, is also what adjustments to the standing frame, the Evolve specifically, have you commonly used to allow people to get into the standing program? One of the things, for example, is plantar flexion contractures. And not only the, if it's, say, tightness versus contractures, if it's a tightness issues, one of the things we often do is, while they're in standing, adjusting the foot plate to the appropriate place, kind of putting a little bit of padding, sometimes a little closed foam underneath their metatarsals to kind of promote a little dorsiflexion stretch while they're in standing. You know, maybe you can offset it on one side. The other thing we sometimes use is a stability disc, you know, the ones, the round disc that people sit on for balance training, using that to help correct some of those scoliotic imbalances you might see.
Oh, that's a good idea. Where do you put it? Like it, they'll sit on it and then you can...
It'll be to the side. And again, I can send you pictures. It'll be to the side. And then what we use is a mobilization belt to then having that padding on the... Now, this is where I get confused. Concave, convex. The convex side, the outer side, yes? You put the pad there, and then you pull them with the belt to a sumo upright. And since they have the table on top, they can kind of do this kind of lateral shear thing to help work out that concavity. So I'm just wondering if you have any other secrets that you might share with us.
So we have variety of that. Of that frames, right, ranging from like the, I call it the Jurassic phase because it's so old, and the newer versions. We have the Evolve easy stand, or they're more flexible. You know, the seat depth, you can change that. You can change the angle of the foot back at the footrest, and then there are individualized knee pads that you can play around with, different straps. So those are pretty high end. The Jurassic type, which we are still using for some residents who really are, that's their favorite. We would use foams. We would use gait belts for their ankles. If they have like inversion of the ankle and they have plantar flexion issues, we would use foams for that, or like a wedge. TheraBand is a little bit less, it's kind of like a gait belt, but it allows some mobility, you know, without really. So those are our favorites. What else? Again, foam for let's say, because if they can't reach the tray, it can only go so far, like to meet you, like so halfway. I put some foam either in the back or in the front to cushion them more. We have those foams.
Because sometimes the chest pad is a little firm, especially if you're kind of cachetic and you don't have a lot of body mass in front.
Right.
The chest pad is padded, but extra padding is never a bad thing. Yes.
Mm-hmm. They've also modified the straps, different type of straps, which is kind of, we have to be individualized, but not because it's hard to change those things if you're doing it for everyone. So we have to be like economical in using the things that we use. So.
And you're lucky you have an adaptive workshop.
Yes, we do.
That can make you stuff.
I know. And I think, yeah, that's where we're kind of spoiled. But yeah, we use those things, and we customize things. Like, let's say for those who have arm weakness, so I would make a trough out of foam, so it's more comfortable for them to put their arms on it. What else? Pads. Something that I'm thinking of, and it passed my idea.
But you are able to work with the basic standard itself, and then for those to customize it to your individuals, because your individuals are really, some of them are pretty unique.
Yes, we do. We try with a given basic, you know, those standing frames that comes with, and then we would for those who really need a lot of customization, we have a box for them. with their foams and with their, you know, all that specific one. So the aide would just, you know how to put it on them. Oh no, I remember now, we are also spoiled with like Rojo pads, you know, those. So if they have like knee pain, we'd put like those Rojo adapter pads on the knee pad or their laterals, because a lot of them are still very sensitive despite of like the lack of motor control. They still have that sensory. We try to accommodate their needs so they can tolerate the standing better.
So it sounds to me like your residents are excited about being able to stand and requesting it. And you, with your resources that you have, you're able to get people up and standing, get them in a standing program. With some of your unique resources, you're able to make individual customized changes. What are some of the successes you've seen with your standing program?
So, yeah, they are very excited to be on the standing program. As I said, that's like one of their ultimate goals when they come there. That's one of the highlights that our admission department would say, you can use the standing frame. So when they got admitted, it's like, when do I stand? So that's there's a lot of positive things about standing. And aside from the things that we already mentioned, like the contracture management, tone management, pain, pressure relief, endurance, strengthening, promoting bowel and bladder movement. One thing that excites me was I had a resident that had a very long standing wound, and we've done everything, you know, seating adjustment, bed adjustment, the wound doctor following them up.
So Clarissa, please, excuse me, where was the wound?
The wound is on the sacral area.
Thank you.
Coccyx sacral area.
Thank you.
It's long standing. It got into the point where it's just stagnantly not doing anything, but it's not healing. It's very stubborn. So they agreed on standing despite of this person's history of osteopenia. You know, it's a complex medical, and this person has like quadriplegia, a little bit movement of the shoulder, but that's about it. Good head control. So we've incorporated standing, and in just 1 month, the wound has improved 50% to the point where after 3 months or within the 3-6 months period, it healed, and we kept the program for a good while until, unfortunately, COVID. So we stopped standing and the wound returned. Yeah. So it's a good testimony that for sure standing has made an impact on that wound.
Nice.
That's exciting. I'm assuming they're back up standing again.
This person, unfortunately, has more complications and they pass away. So, but
Sorry.
There are other people, you know, if they had that beginning of pressure injuries and they haven't tried standing, that would be our, you know, one of our, hey, have you tilted? Hey, you want to try doing standing frame? So one of like the arsenal we have for pressure relief, for sure.
It's nice to hear that you've got some good results where the systematic reviews and the recommendations for length of standing for adults is usually 3 times a week for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I know I personally always say something is better than nothing, but you were actually able to get some good results with once a week. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a consistent, at least once a week consistency of not even 30 minutes sometimes. Sometimes it's just 15, 20 minutes. So it's true. Something better than nothing.
Yes.
Always. Yeah. So if people listening are like, well, we can only do standing once a week, so it's not worth trying. It shows that it is worth trying.
Mm-hmm.
With the right sort of protocol, there's very, really few contraindications outside of the real problems, of course, with standing. Standing is nearly always, with the right prescription, a beneficial thing. So it's good. And it validates everything that we know about getting off your butt.
Mm-hmm.
So how difficult or easy was it in training your staff? Because, again, not working in the hospital where you have a reliable sort of a flow of professionals in terms of not only the nurse, the medical, the aid and the assistance. I rely a good bit on volunteers from the community mm-hmm. who come into mm-hmm. our classes. And some do return, but it's always a good thing to have a quick way of showing people how the machines work, and standing mm-hmm. are part of what we use in our classes. So do you have a special protocol for training new staff members? And how quickly or how easy is it for them to pick up on the adjustments? Because, you know, it's one thing when you have your own machine at home, but when you have to change between different individuals and modify all the adjustabilities, mm-hmm. how is that for you, Clarissa?
So I guess I am, again, lucky in that sense where the two or three staff member that we have been working in the, you know, with us for a long time, and they kind of have that third sense, despite their, you know, their aides, their rehab aides, but they know, they have like that common sense of not putting people in a certain angle because it will hurt them. So that makes a big deal, like that third sense of, you know, don't put them when they're dehydrated, they look dehydrated, like things like that. And we work along with them, like we might not be in the same spot at the same time, but we're on call if something happens, you know. So for the restorative aid, the staff that we regularly work with, we would have that specifications that we have. So the seat depth collar, you know, and then those foot plates have angles on them. It would be easier for me to, I would put like a mark on, because it sometimes it's hard to read the like the letters for the foot plate, like with the angle that they have to go, like I think the height, the foot height, foot plate height. So I'd put silver markings on them, so it's easier for them to follow. And then any specific foam, AFO, so I'll put that there. So all that parameters is written for them to follow. But because they do it every week, it's like second nature for them. And anything that changed in that protocol did not notify me right away. So it's easy in that level. I had an experience in training outpatient clients where they have standing frame at home.
Mm-hmm.
So I would do, so far I only have two of that referral. So the first one was easy enough because we've donated a standing frame for this person. This person is like a middle-aged secondary MS, progressive, and paraplegia. The cognition is there. So this person is involved with her care. They can direct the care team of what to position. So the person is more involved with what's happening with her. So this person have a lot of like care team that takes care of them, but her setup is easy to the point where they can just put it on a certain angle and they slide board on the standing frame mm-hmm. and get them up. That's all. I mean, that's an easy setup for this person. The second person that I have that I've just started with this client. This client have an easy stand at home that they haven't used for at least 3 years. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming pandemic. And then they reported that the last person that transferred this client to the standing frame for some reason led it to like a fall or something. So it broke one of the right leg bone because of that incident. So it took this client, at least from that point on to now, to seek for like, can I stand again? I have this standing frame. home? Can I still use it? And then the referral actually came from a home health therapist, physical therapist, who's asking, like, can you reassess this person if they can still do standing frame? So, like, okay. So the client came to our clinic with PCAs, and the PCAs are hardly able to speak English, but they see what I do. So I'm not quite sure yet how to transition the standing program. It'll be challenging with the history of fractures and that, you know, how easy they are, can follow through. But I'm probably going to rely on the home health therapist who referred that to me, that training part of it, because they're there, you know. Even if they picture the setup, you know, I would set it up based on our setup in the clinic. It's pretty much like a simulation versus reality. So between the coordination of me and the home health therapist would be a big key in making it happen, and hopefully make it work for this client where it'll be more successful than having another incident where he won't use it. Yeah. Because that most of the time, that's the thing. The equipment is there, but nobody's putting them the right way, or there's not manpower's like lagging in putting them there.
Yeah. And I think that aspect of teaching, especially if you don't have stable staff like you have in the inpatient setting, if it's an outpatient person is at home and, you know, they have 3 different aides, or maybe the aides do transition quite quickly through, it's hard to get the consistency that all of your wound staff, for example, in terms of head control, it's hard to get the consistency that will create a situation for functional improvement. So that is the challenge at home.
I think one thing that I find myself, again, being in a more spoiled Boston home environment, having those lift that goes through the ceiling versus those floor lift, that makes a difference for any type of positioning, even in a wheelchair or a shower chair, because of the height advantage, I want to say.
Do you use the lifts, the ceiling lifts that you just described, to help people?
Yeah, that runs through the gym that we have. So that's a difference if I'm doing, you know, a training for outpatient clinic. They don't have those lifts at home. So I'd have to consider that type of lift transferring into an easy stand.
Depending on the ease, one of the things we do often with the easy stand to help people get in is, one, we take off the top of the back. Those little screws can be unscrewed and you can put them back on. And that gives somebody a little bit more space, because sometimes the back is so high, you can't be behind what you're doing, especially a two-person transfer.
I see.
And sometimes we actually do remove the tray component. So the knee pads.
Oh, yeah. Some of them can swing away.
The swing away ones. Exactly. We can kind of pivot the whole head, is what I call that whole knee and tray component. We pivot the whole head away, and it allows for more easy access into the transfer for one or two people transfer. So there are some modifications one can do to the frame to make the transfer process safer and easier for if it's a one person movement.
I think now that I've come to think of it, this recent client that I had would be the first one that I'll be transferring into the frame via floor lift. So it'll be an experience.
Clarissa, if they have an easy stand and it doesn't have the removable back, they can be retrofitted.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. You can go through whoever the dealer is that provided it, or if you have trouble, call me. And with the serial number, you can get the parts to make it. And instead of using a screwdriver or whatever, it's knobs.
Okay.
So it makes it easier to take the back off. Because I agree with Lawrence. I find that easier, especially with somebody with a lot of tone. If you come with a Hoyer lift from behind without the back, again, you're going to have the two people get their feet in, get them seated, get them organized.
Right.
Give a chance for the tone to calm down a little bit, and then you can put the back on.
Nice.
Okay.
Thank you for that, Marianne. I did not know that. Now I know. Excellent.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about the physical and physiological benefits of standing. Have you noticed any psychological benefits? Because I know I've read research on surveys of people who use standers and have used them for years, up to some people in the 80s who still use their standers. And they've said that it gives them a sense of being normal, improved sense of well-being. Have you found that?
Can I just throw in my two cents before you, Clarissa? One of my friends who is tall, he's like, Lawrence, every day I'm sitting in my chair, he's tetraplegic, and I'm looking at people's butts. But I am 6'2". It's nice to be able to look at people in the eyes. I'm so cool. It's such a good feeling to get up. This is what he says all the time.
Yeah, I think I get that too. Because every time they first stand up, they're like, oh, I'm me again. You know? They kind of would be happy that they're taller than you. They would like smile and like, oh, I'm taller than you. Like, oh yeah, you're taller than me. So it makes them happy for sure. There's like, you know, to be upright again. And it gives them that sense of pride that they've accomplished being on that level again. Because they've always say, I haven't been in this viewpoint in years. And in our clinic, one good spot, our favorite spot for the standing frame is like through the doorway where you can like people watch. And they'll have like that big smile on their face when they're in that spot, and people will like recognize them. Oh, you're standing. You're taller than me. So it gives them that badge, for sure.
They feel better.
Yeah, it gives them that sense of accomplishment for sure. To add to that too, is that we have received the most recent donation of the glider, which is kind of like higher than the standing frames. So we've not evaluated a lot of people with it yet. Because obviously you need at least, you know, upper body strength and to get to that gliding part of it.
It can be done active assistive.
Oh, yeah. Yes. But a lot of them would like, oh, now that I'm standing for over a year, can I be graduated to the glider? So that's kind of like a progression that we have for our goals.
Yeah, the range of motion, and especially with the hip extension, is something that I'm sure that you'll be looking into for any participants who, possible clients who want to use the glider, because I've seen that it's not. The upper arm is one thing, but if they don't have that range down at the hip.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you're right. Somebody that is successful in using it with one of our residents has been using a Canadian crutch for years. So they've had some good lower body weakness in quite some time, but their upper body is good. And then when this person came to us, her the goal of this resident was, I want to walk again. And they haven't walked in years, you know, and the resident would always say, I've walked with a Canadian crutch for years. It's doable. It's possible, you know, and obviously we don't burst the bubble right away. So we've offered, I think we can do standing and the glider. And then true enough, so far amongst the residents, we have 96 residents. This person is the only one who can glide for like 20 minutes.
Nice.
Excellent.
So there you go. You're walking and you're not falling and we're both happy.
Nice. It's a win-win.
It's a win-win.
The glider has its own definite uses. And even just the static positioning, you know, if you can get somebody into a stride position and then they can do some different stretches in the stride position, even stance. It's useful for all these things.
I know that's somewhat of a pet peeve of Lawrence's, is that people get up in their standers and they stand.
It is.
I know it is.
It is. What are we doing here? So, yeah, yeah, let's use the devices to the maximal abilities, because we know all the clinical stuff, you know, and I'm saying, hey, we know all the benefits in terms of, you know, bone density and tone, but if you can bring it to function, then some of that transfers, as I said, some of that transfers from being in the standing position, I think does echo into when one returns to a sitting position in terms of knowing how to activate into your shoulder girdle, knowing how to move energy from your arms down into your body. Those things can be translated. And so any opportunity to use one position to work into another is always a good thing in my head.
That's true. It's an economy of exercise, right? If you can do everything. Total body workout in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And even just the supported standing, they did EMG studies. I can't remember when they were done, but just getting into the supported standing position, there was increased EMG activity in the anti-gravity muscles.
Oh, yeah. Right. I'm sure it works all the way up to the head.
Yeah.
Which is what you were talking about earlier in terms of head control. While you're in the standing frame, and you build people up from the tilt table into tolerating coming from sit to stand in one motion. That's a big, big change. Because that's how people move around. You know, they're lying down, they get sat up, and then they transfer into their chair, no matter which level you are. Being able to tolerate that in transition quicker than what a tilt table implies, the standing frame is good for that.
And it's also a little bit more socially acceptable.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And having a big tilt table in your apartment or whatever.
Yeah. That's always like whenever I put someone out, the most recent person I put in a tilt table was identifying it as one of the gadgets in Star Trek. I've not seen it, but the client was like trying to tell me about the episode in Star Trek. And then I put the client in the tilt table. And then after that, he had a big smile. So I said, oh, so I got you to do the Star Trek scene then. Like opening up Sparky or something like that.
When I see a tilt table and people coming up, I always think of Frankenstein.
It is.
In the movie where he comes up out of the butt.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I mean, any type of standing is good for people. And it's not only good for the body, it's good for the soul.
Mm-hmm. And it's great for caregivers and family. You shouldn't leave them out. Family, especially. Seeing one's loved one back up into that position of uprightness is so... Family members get raptured, I would say. But... able to look people who they've known, this is their relationship, to look them in the eye when they're in that standing position. And so being able to get up there is also good for that population as well. And, you know, that should not be discounted, especially in an outpatient setting, because it helps them to understand the benefit of standing. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully they can work with aids or themselves to help their need get fulfilled for that person who needs to get up into standing. Because, you know, once you see it, you see it. If you never see it, you don't really know what you're missing.
One thing that they ask me to do every time, like in that initial stand, is to, if they have like an iPad or like a phone, then like, can you take my picture and stand?
Absolutely.
Text my daughter.
All the time. My son. All the time. Yeah. Take my picture. I'll post it on the web. I'll send it to my daughter. I'll send it to my
like
family.
So it's something. So. Not all the time with a tilt table, though.
too much Frankenstein, perhaps.
Too much Frankenstein, I know.
Well, I think a lot of the difference of it in the Frankenstein is with the standing frames, there's less machine and more person.
Yeah.
Does anybody have anything else to add? Or are we pretty much done?
I think we've gotten nice, good information. Thank you very much, Clarissa. That was wonderful.
You're welcome. Thank you for some techniques from you guys.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to share.
I'll definitely reach out if I have any standing conundrum.
Oh, reach out. Well, I think we're about out of time. We've had a great discussion with my guest, Clarissa Perez, and my co-host, Lawrence Harding, on the benefits of standing for people with multiple sclerosis. We talked about both the medical benefits, the physiological benefits, and the psychosocial benefits, not only for the patient, but also for their family and caregivers, which I think I overlooked until hearing Lawrence's and Clarissa's comments and examples today. If you want more information on our standing, please go to our website, ultimatemedical.com, and click on the education page. I want to thank my co-host, Lawrence Harding, and my guest, Clarissa Perez, for participating in this segment of Positioning 365 Beyond Seating. I'm your host, Marianne Girardi. Thanks for listening.